Today, I ask you to turn to Matthew chapter 5 and verses 31 and 32 once again. This will be the 62nd message in the series on the Sermon on the Mount and will be the fourth part of our large teaching on marriage and divorce. The fourth part of our large teaching involving marriage and divorce. Reading from Matthew chapter 5 and verse 31, "It hath been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causeth her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced, committeth adultery." With this scripture here and that which we have been covering in the 19th chapter of the book of Matthew, and there we might turn over there and look at those verses before we, for purposes of review, give what we've already laid down. Let's go to Matthew chapter 19 and beginning in verse 3 with the same subject on a different occasion in the life of the Lord. "The Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him, and saying unto him, Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And he answered and said unto them, Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And said, For this cause shall a man leave father and mother, shall cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. They say unto him, Why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? And he saith unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your heart, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, shall marry another, committeth adultery, and whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." For the benefit of those who have come into our assembly today, perhaps for the first time, or for those that were not here in the previous Sundays, it is always our purpose to try to give a general review before we proceed with the thought at hand today. And in the previous three sessions, we've laid down some principles which our Lord has taught regarding this matter of divorce. And in this, first, we have seen that marriage is a lifetime commitment of one person to bring about the intellectual, moral, spiritual, and sexual happiness of another person of the opposite sex. Marriage is a lifetime commitment of oneself to serve another person of the opposite sex. Secondly, we have seen that marriage is the closest of all human relationships, even that of a father and his child, or a parent-child relationship, is not as close as a husband-wife relationship. Thirdly, we have seen that only a sinful, stubborn self-will, as expressed in sexual fornication, can dissolve that union which God has joined together. This is the only basis that Christ allows for the dissolving of the ordinance of marriage, and that is when a person expresses their lack of commitment to their partner by committing fornication with another person. Fourthly, we have seen that all divorces occurring without fornication involved are unlawful before God, in that God still viewed the couple as man and wife. Fifthly, we've seen that anyone who remarries without a lawful divorce under God's sight makes themselves guilty of adultery, which is a form of fornication. And then lastly, sixth, that anyone who marries a person who has not had a lawful divorce makes themselves guilty of adultery, which is a form of fornication. Now today, we come to Matthew chapter 19, verses 10 through 12, where that the disciples asked Jesus a question. Jesus has silenced the objection of the Pharisees, and He has answered well in upholding the institution of marriage. Now the Pharisees have left, and His disciples now have a problem with His teachings on marriage. And I trust that you that are here today are disciples of Christ. You're one which is attempting to follow Him. Then if you have been introduced for the first time to these concepts of marriage, or if the first time you were introduced to them, you probably have had or are having some difficulties with His teachings on marriage. Well, let's see if we can begin to answer some of the questions. I'm again thankful, as I expressed last Sunday, for the number of questions that have been phoned in, or you've come by and asked me in person. Now, Pastor, in light of this, how do I handle this difficulty? We'll now spend the remainder of our study in divorce in trying to answer the questions which the disciples raised here and which are raised elsewhere in the Bible. Verse 10 of Matthew chapter 19. His disciples say unto Him, if the case of the man be so with his wife, it's good not to marry. Master, if this is his relationship with his wife, and it involves such a commitment as you have set forth here, then it'd be better, perhaps, not to get married. Have you asked yourself that question, if you're here and you're not married? Now, that doesn't involve many people today because they don't give that much thought to getting married. But if you're here and you're single, you ought to give marriage some serious consideration. And here's one of the considerations. It might be better not to get married. All right, now that's what the disciples are objecting to here. They're raising, well, now, Master, in light of this strict requirement, maybe it'd be better not to marry. Now, look at Jesus' answer, verse 11. But He said unto them, all men cannot receive this saying, save they to whom it is given. It is not possible for all men to remain unmarried, only to those who are given a special calling in life. And then He illustrates in verse 12 with the basis of His answer, for there are some eunuchs which were so born from their mother's womb, and there are some eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men, and there be eunuchs which have made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He that is able to receive it, let him receive it. Now, I want to look at the division. We'll try to answer this question and divide the message today into two parts. First, the disciples' question involving the advisability of getting married, and then secondly, how Jesus answered that. Now, if I had some of my college teachers and my professors on homiletics here today, why, they would totally go insane with the way we're going to deal with this, because you're supposed to have a three-point outline, an A, B, C under this, but that was the way I was taught to preach. But I can't find a three-point outline in this here. I'm just going to divide it the way Jesus divides it, all right? The disciples ask a question, and Jesus gives an answer. Because I'm not interested in homiletical finesse, I'm interested in communicating truth to you as my hearers this day. First, the disciples' question, is it advisable to get married? Because they're saying, in light of all of what you've said, it might be better not to marry. Now, what does this question reveal? First of all, it reveals that these disciples could not and dared not deny Jesus' teaching on marriage, but that they were certainly struggling with the difficulties of it. That's the mark of a disciple. A disciple dares not deny outwardly someone whom he knows to be authoritative in truth. But it does not mean that a disciple will not struggle with the difficulty when that truth is laid upon that person. I believe it was One of individuals here in the congregation last Sunday after the message, I was visiting with him in the afternoon, and he said, didn't realize that was all in marriage. And he said, commented this, whatever happened to the little old simple Sunday morning sermon? He was just joking. But whatever happened to the concept of just going to church on Sunday morning and having a simple sermon and then leave that? Well, I would reply like this. If you had sat under the feet of Jesus Christ, you would never have heard a simple Sunday morning sermon. You'd have never heard that. And if you don't believe that, you just go through the New Testament and see how these disciples were continually confronted with problems and difficulties as they sat at the feet of Jesus for 3 years. Ever so often I have it charged me, well, Pastor, you make things so difficult. Why don't you just preach the simple teachings of Jesus? Well, I'd like to find some simple teachings of Jesus. My friend, these things, when you look into them and see how the disciples were looking at them, you'll find them saying, Master, this is a hard saying. Who can understand it? And you'll find the Pharisees saying, quit beating around the bush. Tell us plainly if you're the Christ. The disciples had difficulties with the teachings of Jesus. In fact, many times in the New Testament, Jesus would give a teaching, and then the gospel writers would record that the disciples' response were, they were afraid to ask Him what He meant. Are you afraid to ask questions? The disciples were. Now, I'm one of those individuals that if I don't have an answer to my question, I'm going to keep on asking and asking and asking until I find out. Back when I was in college, in Bible college, we had about 150 ministers in one class, and the professor would start lecturing through that class, and he'd get about 5 minutes and hear my hand go up. Well, that was all right at the first start of the year, and then after we got about middle of the course, why, he got to the point where he'd say, what do you want now, Gables? What do you want now? I want an answer to what you just said. There's a problem there. Well, the disciples asked questions, but at times they were hesitant on asking questions because they're just afraid because of revealing something that they didn't understand. So this question reveals that they would not openly deny Jesus, but they were having difficulty with what He was teaching. Now, if you're in that situation this morning, as I have been and will continue to be as I study the Bible, then don't become discouraged. Just ask God for grace to give you understanding of what the Bible is saying. Continue to seek. Now, the second thing this question reveals when they said maybe it's better not to marry is this. It reveals the powerful influence of sinful customs and traditions. These disciples had grown up with their religious leaders teaching them certain things. And now then here comes a man along from the other side of the track, so to speak, born in a stable, not trained in the colleges of the Hebrew learned people. And he suddenly says, now here, what your religious teachers have been teaching you is wrong. What I say unto you is true. And all of the practices and the customs that they had been introduced to from a child, they would come out and say, but I've been taught that all my life. And the influence of certain practices and customs and traditions have a great grasp upon all of us, even in our modern culture. Third thing this question reveals. It reveals the extreme reaction of the flesh to the truth of God. God reveals His truth through Jesus Christ, and the flesh says, well, if that's the truth, then I just won't even participate in the ordinance of marriage. They were as if saying, well, if I can't have the liberty of divorcing someone at my option, then I won't even participate in the ordinance of marriage. Like a sullen child. I remember a couple of years ago, I believe it was my youngest son, was playing with some Lincoln logs in the basement. And I went down and helped him a little bit, and building a big bridge complex with those logs. And he got it in his head that he wanted to put a certain log in a certain way. And I said, no, Mark, that won't work. The whole thing will fall down if you start building on top of that. My youngest son doesn't always obey his father. And so we got in a little discussion there. And he was determined he was going to put that log in that particular place. And I said, "No, Mark, you put it in there and it's going to fall." So about that time the phone rang and I took that piece of log with me, went upstairs and answered it. Now, we already had a good-sized complex of the bridge built. When I went back down there, he'd taken his foot and just kicked the whole thing in. If he wasn't able to have his option and his liberty to put the piece in there where he wanted it, then we just won't play with it at all. The disciples are saying here in essence now, well, if I don't have the freedom of getting rid of a wife who's making me unhappy, then it's just better I don't even put up with the ordinance of marriage. It's better not to marry, if that's the situation. The next thing this question reveals, it shows that the blessings of God can be turned into grievous burdens when sinful man is told that he's not at liberty to do as he pleases. What a blessing God had given to the human race when he said it's not good for man to live alone. And he gave man a helpmate. And that great healthy ordinance of marriage which we have so laid out here and seen in the teachings of Christ, how it's upheld. Now then, that beautiful blessing of God becomes a grievous thing when man is told he doesn't have the liberty to use it as he wants to. Now that's the essence of all sin. God gave man all of the creation and said, "Here, you rule over it for my glory." And man says, "If I don't have the liberty to use it as I see best, I'll just not play with you, God." And he rebelled. And that's the essence that gets to the root of all of our sinful problems. Is that we want to have the option of the final say-so in a given matter. God can lay down a law. We might say, "All right, I agree with that." He lays down another law. We say, "I don't agree with that." We want our liberty to determine what the outcome is going to be. And when the disciples are told that they're not at liberty to use God's blessings any way they so please, then they became upset with it. The flesh of men turns the great blessings of God into grievous burdens when they can't use them as we see best. God knows best. And man says, "No, I know best." And even the great blessings of God are turned into a burden. Now, what should the disciples' question have been? How should the disciples have responded to this teaching, that marriage involves a lifetime commitment of myself to serve the needs and the happiness of another person? How should they have responded to that in words such as this? If marriage then is such a high commitment, then oh, how I need to seek God's grace in order to deny my own proud passions and so please my wife or my partner. Marriage has difficulties to it. Now, those of you that haven't entered into it yet, I'm warning you ahead of time. Marriage is not what it's shown on television and the novels that you read about. Marriage has difficulties. It has problems because two sinners get yoked up in one home. And when you get two sinners in one home, each wanting its own way, well, you're going to have difficulties and there's problems going to come there in that union. But how should we view the teachings of Christ? How should we respond to the high requirements of marriage? My friend, we ought to go into it with the attitude, "God, will you give me grace to subdue my own lustful pride in order that I might make my partner happy?" It's going to be a rough go, God, I know that. But I need your grace to go through this life, to subdue this proud heart that's always seeking its own way, that's always looking out upon others to serve it. Lord, subdue it and make me committed to serve my wife. Instead of looking at my wife and my kids and my home and everything as objects that are there to serve my happiness, Oh God, would you grant me grace that I can serve my wife and my children and my home and serve their happiness? Because the Bible says in so doing we shall find happiness ourselves. But is it more blessed to what? To give than to receive. A great principle of finding happiness. You never seek out after happiness by having others serve you. True happiness comes by serving and committing yourself to the welfare of another partner. And what's the reward? Oh, it's so grateful. It's such a happy thing when I help someone else out. Have you parents not seen this? Maybe perhaps on the Christmas morning when the little ones, when they were small and their eyes were big and they'd run there under the tree on the morning and you just stand back and watch them. They're not thinking a thing about you right then. They're not saying, oh, thank you for this, thank you for that. They're so engrossed with themselves. But does that not give you a sense of satisfaction in knowing that you've given of yourself to them? There's the reward of man. And what's going to be the essence of the reward of the Christian in the eternal state? I shall be able to serve my Christ perfectly. And because of that, I shall find perfect happiness. Now, that's the way the disciples should have been answering Jesus' teaching. If marriage has such a high requirement, oh God, I need much grace to subdue this proud, selfish heart in order that I may be committed to another person to bring about their well-being. Now, that's the way they should have answered. But they were answering within the realm of the flesh. Now let's go to Jesus' answer, how he deals with their problem. Jesus, the wise man, did not deal with them harshly as he did with the selfish, rebellious Pharisees who were tempting him, because these disciples were not setting out to tempt him. They were just having some honest problems. And so in a very kind, gentle way, he doesn't rebuke them, but he sets forth positive principles which are to correct their misunderstanding. Now let's look how he deals with them. First, he says, to your question, it is all men cannot receive this saying, but to they to whom it is given. And he states that not all can remain in an unmarried state. Not everybody has the capacity to go through life unmarried. And we've hit on this in our previous messages, but let's now go to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Where the Apostle Paul is dealing with the same issue, same questions. And it's such been a thrill to me to see that the questions the disciples asked Jesus and the converts of Paul here at Rome, what they ask him are the very questions that you're calling in on the phone and asking me to deal with. So how relevant the gospel or the Bible is, even to our age right here. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Beginning in verse 1, now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me. See, they'd wrote him some questions, had written him some questions. Paul, we got some problems. He says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. That is, it's lawful for a person to remain unmarried. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and every woman have her own husband. Not all can remain unmarried. Some have needs that can only be met by a marital relationship. So it's proper to remain unmarried. If you can receive that, well and good. But not all men can receive this teaching of remaining in an unmarried state. Verses 7 through 9. For I would that all men were even as myself, that is the apostle, single. But every man hath his proper gift of God, one after this manner and another after that. See, Paul says it would be well if all men were as me, but not all men are given that gift. All right, verse 8, I say therefore to the unmarried and the widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. Remain unsingle. But if they cannot contain, let them marry, for it's better to marry than to burn. If you cannot remain unmarried and you have certain needs that can only be met within a marital union, then you go ahead and marry, for marriage is good and proper. And it's far better to marry than to burn with unlawful lust. But if you have a gift of remaining in a single state as I, that's good also. So who can receive it? Those that can receive marriage, let them marry. Those that do not need the marital relationship, let them remain unmarried. God has not laid down a commandment in His Word that all men should marry, and He has not laid down a commandment that all men should remain unmarried. That's what Paul means when he says in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 6, "But I speak this by permission and not of commandment." This teaching which we're laying out to whether you ought to be married or unmarried, this is a thing which God permits at your disposal here. And it's not something that God has laid down a commandment like, "Thou shalt not kill," which binds the consciences of all men. Men must find out their calling in life. And if your calling is to remain in a celibate state, then that means unmarried, then you remain there. If you cannot contain and you need the marital relationship, then you go ahead and marry. So this is the way that Christ answers this. Then He uses an illustration of the situation involving that of a eunuch. Someone remarked last week that to me that in the last 3 weeks, they had received more sex education here in the morning services than they had even after all their life of learning outside of this. Well, I find that I can't even deal with the word eunuch without having to deal with that. How many of you know what a eunuch is? Could I see your hands? You think you really know what a eunuch is? All right. Now, if you do, then if you're in agreement, then have you gone to your dictionary and looked it up? You know what a eunuch is? Webster's New World Dictionary defines eunuch as a man whose sexual glands have been removed, a castrated man, one who served as a guard in a sultan's harem. How many of you knew that's what a eunuch was? All right, very good. In the Orient, the common practice, which was not practiced in Israel, but with the heathen nations round about, when one of the kings or the sultan would have his harem of wives, he would need someone to watch over and to care for that harem, and that would be a man. So he would select an individual, either willingly or unwillingly, and have that man rendered sexless, so that man could not have relations with his harem. And in many cases, this involved a dedication to a religious principle, in which that an individual would be willing to have this done, because it would be a mark of dedication to the king who would be viewed as a god. And so some men would willingly submit to this in order to be given the caretaking responsibility of the harem of wives. And then at the same time, the man then that had the harem could trust that this individual would not violate any of his wives. Now, Jesus used this illustration in explaining who should get married and who should not get married. And He gives three different classes of eunuchs. If you are here today and you're unmarried, then the teachings of Christ will give three different areas which you are to consider before you enter into the marriage union, involving a commitment of yourself to another. Now, this practice of having one's glands removed was forbidden by God. I want to take you back now to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 23. Deuteronomy, chapter 23, and verse 1. The law of God was, listen carefully, he that is wounded in the stones, or hath his privy member cut off, shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord. A person which had been rendered sexless, either through an accident or wound, or had it done purposely, was not allowed to participate in the public worship of Israel. And the reason for this is that many of these people in the other nations, they did this as an act of dedication to their God. So God did not condone this practice, but Jesus now picked out and used this principle to explain marriage. First, now, there are three groups of people who should not get married. Three groups. The first group is those who are incapable of marriage by nature. There are some eunuchs which are so born from their mother's womb. People who are born with physical defects so that they could not commit themselves to meeting the physical needs of another partner should refrain from getting married. Now that's the one category. Those by nature of birth should not marry. The second group are those who are incapable of marriage by providential acts. That is, here, these are eunuchs which were made eunuchs of men. In the providence of their life, they had been born with the ability to function within the marriage union, but through providence, they had had an operation so that they could no longer function in the union. Now, Jesus said those individuals should not marry. They should remain in an unmarried state. And then the third group, he uses not in a literal sense, but in a figurative sense, those who make themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. And this is the third group, those who are indisposed to marriage by the grace of God. And Paul was one of these. Those who had a higher commitment to advance the cause of God than they had to the marriage union, then should not marry. And Paul says, I'm one of those. It's not unlawful to marry, but I'm one of those that because of my calling, I have remained in this state that I was called in, and in order to advance the kingdom of heaven. What are the three states which should be advisable against a marriage union? First, by nature. Second, by providential affairs. And thirdly, by grace. God has called some people not to marry and has given them the gift of remaining unmarried. Now, the essence of all this being with the eunuch is that the eunuch was now in control over the lust of his body. And the eunuch no longer had to have those needs satisfied. He could commit himself to another lifestyle. And by grace, God so works with some men and some women that they do not have to have the necessities of a marriage union. And thus, they can commit themselves unto the kingdom of heaven and advance His cause in that kingdom. Paul gives an example of this of himself in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 again, when he would say, I would that all men abide as I. And then quickly, time is getting away from us again, in verse 25 of 1 Corinthians 7, he says, Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord. Jesus didn't teach anything on that. Yet I give my judgment as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. I suppose, therefore, that this is good for the present distress, I say, that it is good for a man so to be. It's proper under this present era of persecution for a man to remain unmarried. Art thou bound to a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife? Seek not a wife. But if thou marry, thou hast not sinned, and if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, she shall have trouble in the flesh. But I spare you. There are certain providential circumstances which it might be unadvisable for a person to marry in, particularly involving persecution. Now look it down in verse 32. But I would have you without carefulness. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. Now, you see, a person which has been given grace to commit themselves to a single state is one which has now devoted their life to the ministry of the kingdom of God entirely. But whenever anyone marries, it will take away some of the time to take care of the needs of their wife and children. Now, I am married. I have 4 children in the providence of God. And this is my calling. But at the same time, I will be the first to acknowledge I cannot be the minister that some men could be and are if they have a smaller family and less financial needs to take care of. Can you imagine what a single man and woman, say an older couple, what they could carry on in this church that I cannot carry on? Can you imagine the hours that they would have to visit from home to home that I don't have because I have the needs of a wife and children to take care of? And if you aren't married and aren't in that circumstance, then you'll have to get in that circumstance to know how much time that a wife and 4 children involve. But am I out of the will of God? Are you out of the will of God for having me here? I trust not. But you'll just have to put up with me. I've got to devote half my time to the Lord's work and half to the Lord's work in my family. Now, do you see that? Now, Paul says, that's why I would that all were as I. But what about Peter? He says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 5, have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as the other apostles and as the brethren of the Lord and Cephas? Peter had a right to support a wife. Nothing unlawful about that. Paul says, I have a right to be single. But let Peter have his ministry, I'll have my ministry. There's no hard laid down commandment of God on this. Let every man abide in the gift which God has given him. Now, quickly, how can we apply this to those of you that are here today? First, to those that are here that are unmarried. Will you give me your undivided attention for the next 2 or 3 minutes now? For you, if you're unmarried, how should you be approaching this matter of marriage? Do you know, young people, that there's somebody walking around right now in this world that's going to be your companion? Do you know that? Isn't that exciting? You may not have any idea who they are, but they're out here somewhere. They may be in California, but right now there's a companion that you're going to share a time with. Well, now, how should you be approaching this in your Christian commitment? Now, listen carefully. Don't be asking God to bring someone to you who will serve you and make you happy. You be asking God to bring that person along whom you can commit yourself to make them happy. Now, you get the principle? Don't be asking God to send someone along to make you happy. Ask Him to bring that right woman, that right man along that you can commit your whole being to see that their intellectual, moral, and physical needs are met. Because in so doing, that'll make you happy. It's more blessed to give than to receive. May I say to you, young people, that this concept of you standing on the street corner and here comes the knight in shining armor just rides by on the white stallion is a mirage. It's something which will disappear in the desert of a real life situation. It'll vanish. The concept that here someone comes along and just sweeps me off my feet, that's got to be the one for me. My friend, you can go by a store window and see a nice dress or a nice suit and get swept off your feet like that. The concept which should be in a person's mind when they enter marriage, am I committed enough to make this person happy? Not how will this knight in shining armor, how can I benefit from him? Oh God, send me someone that I can commit myself to a lifetime situation to bringing about their happiness. And when that is done, then I'll guarantee you, when you, after a few months or maybe even a few weeks in some cases, you won't see as many clinks in the shining armor that's there. And when they start coming up, you won't be running the way the Jews were. Well, she burned my biscuits and she has bad breath. Therefore, I have a right to divorce her and get rid of her. Now she's made me unhappy. Oh, this knight in shining armor, how he made me happy at first. But now then, he's got all sorts of things about him I don't like anymore. And he's making me unhappy. Let me get the divorce paper and put him to go. You see? If you're unmarried, ask God to bring the right person into your life that you can commit to your partner a lifetime of commitment to making them happy. And then to those of you that are married here today, do you remember back the early part of your marriage? How lovely it was? How many of you, how long was it before you had your first argument? May I share that it was 2 years before my wife and I ever had a disagreement? 2 whole years. And you know why that was? Because we were so committed to each other making one another happy. But then some circumstances started developing. I've got about 4 of them that affected this relationship. And my wife, for some strange reason, started devoting a little more of the time than she'd been devoting to me when these little things in diapers started coming along. Oh, now, wait a minute. This isn't right. She's not interested in me. And I began, in a change of attitude, not aware to myself, I began to view that woman as making me unhappy. And I lost my commitment to making her happy. Now, if you're having marital difficulties right now, you stop and ask yourself this question. Is it because, and 99% of the couples or the individuals that I deal with in marital problems, they'll walk into my office and say, Pastor Gables, my wife's not doing this or my husband's not doing this. It's always what the other's not doing for them. I have yet, with 2 exceptions, had individual walk into my office and say, oh, Pastor, I just cannot do enough to make my wife happy. I'm miserable. I'm having marital problems. That just doesn't happen. But it's people who begin to think, my wife is here to make me happy. Better get the biscuits right. Better use Ipana. Better get all of these, have the beds clean, all of this. And if it isn't, woman, here's your divorce paper. You're making me unhappy. And this subtle shift comes. And then you start using your wife as an object to serve you. And instead of making you happier, death starts in the marriage, and it begins to deteriorate. And I have discovered that when I really set out and do things for my wife, expecting nothing in return, that I get the greatest benefit out of my marriage. May I advise you to consider that? When I get my wife a new dress for her birthday, if I do that so she'll get me a new suit on my birthday, I don't get much enjoyment out of it. That's not a quality of life. But when I do something for her, not expecting anything in return, you know what my reward is? It is in giving. And when she does the same for me, you talk about a sweet relationship within the marriage union. It's more blessed to give than to receive. Should all marry? No. Those by nature should not marry. Those by providence, which are unable to commit themselves to marriage, cannot marry, and those by God's grace that are determined to serve His kingdom